There's no problem.
I know that you have to get away, but we found your submission a very valuable one in the area of tax law particularly, and I do have some areas that I want to ask you about with respect to the submission, but please feel free to make any introductory comments that that you need to. I'm proposing to go a bit over the time that we said we were going to break for lunch, but what, do you have a deadline that you...
It's no problem if we go over. Thank you, Commissioner. We have. I have to leave by 11:45 at the latest. I'm going straight to the airport at that point.
You don't
point.
Mean 11:45, do you?
I mean 11:45.
That's a relief, because that was 5 minutes
one.
Ago.
That's right. I have to leave by 11:45,
okay,
so
understand
it's no problem
that.
To me if we go over.
Okay, well, thank you for that.
In general terms, then, you've had the written submission. I've had a couple of conversations with your staff as well on a couple of issues, so I don't propose to repeat it.
Mm.
I might just summarise briefly the three recommendations and then make a couple of points.
Sure.
The tax law and superannuation law, as is always the case, but particularly superannuation at the moment, is in a state of flux. I'm sure the Commission's aware of that. So I might just highlight a couple of areas where things may change.
That would be helpful, although my questions are mainly in the area of taxation law. I'll tell you that. But please don't let me stop you mentioning where things may change, because that would be helpful.
All right. So my first summary recommendation was simply that there is ongoing discrimination in respect of same-sex relationships in the federal income tax law and federal superannuation law, and in supplementary or subsidiary legislation like the fringe benefits tax law, which sort of acts as a backup to the income tax. The core of that discrimination is in the definition of spouse, which is a statutory definition in each of those pieces of legislation. In the early 1990s, that definition of spouse, which incorporates, of course, the common law meaning of married couples, was expanded to cover de facto opposite sex spouses, usually the wording being living together as husband or wife, but depending on the statute, slightly different in some cases. That definition of spouse is then picked up in a range of different concessions in both the income tax law and the superannuation law, and that is what leads to the discrimination. So my first recommendation is that that definition be altered so as to encompass same-sex couples who would also satisfy the other aspects of what it is to be a de facto couple.
Yep.
And so I refer you to the state and territory law in brief, and I'm aware that the Commission has probably been able to ascertain what has been done in states and territories around the country. Just briefly on that, in respect of the previous speaker, the issue is certainly contested socially, but every state or territory parliament in Australia, apart from South Australia, has enacted legislation to recognise same-sex couples in most of their property, fiscal and other compensation type laws.
Yes.
So to some extent one could say there's a national consensus that this should be eliminated, even though it still stands there in the federal law. Just in respect of income tax law, probably a week or so after I had put in the submission, about a month or so, the Administrative Appeals Tribunal came down with a decision, which is the first decision on the income tax law to confirm that spouse does not include same-sex couples. I'm aware, I think the Commission has that reference, but it is 2006 AATA 728.
Yes.
The definition of spouse in the federal income tax law was considered, and it was held that it was only covering opposite sex couples.
Yeah,
not a surprise, but the first time we've seen
that.
Yeah,
I think we are aware of that one.
Yes.
But thank you.
So that changed there. In respect of superannuation, I think I mentioned in the submission that the federal government is considering major changes to superannuation law. You're probably aware of that. They recently came down with their proposals, which are, in respect of couples, affect in particular the situation of death benefits. Death benefit payouts will be completely exempt from tax where made to dependents. However, where there is a non-dependent death benefits will be taxed at a higher rate than currently. So it becomes more important than before for a same-sex spouse to fit within the definition of dependent in the superannuation law in order to have equal access to that exemption.
Those amendments haven't passed the Parliament.
No, they haven't. They've been announced to be effective 1 July 2007, and the federal government has said they will introduce legislation by the end of this year.
Because as I recall, we wrote to the attorney and drew that point to his attention as part of the inquiry, but I'll go back and check that.
Right, yes.
The point that you're making, well, I think, as I recall, we wrote to the attorney and drew that to his attention.
Okay. The definition of dependent, there are two ways that the spouse excludes a same-sex couple. However, a same-sex partner could, as I said in the submission, fit into the definition of dependent in the superannuation law, either if they can establish that they are financially dependent on the member of the fund at the date of that member's death, that is, in the ordinary sense, they are in some way financially dependent, or if they can establish that they are in an interdependency relationship.
Yep.
So it is possible for a same-sex partner to be a dependent. However, that threshold is fairly high. Yep. My submission points out some of the inconsistencies or difficulties of qualifying as compared to qualifying as an opposite-sex de facto spouse. So those would be the only further submissions on those two points.
Mm-hmm.
My second recommendation about interdependency relationship is essentially a backup that the federal government would probably argue that it has solved the issue of same-sex couples in superannuation by establishing this new concept of interdependency relationship. So my argument would be that the requirement, the conditions for being in an interdependency relationship are stricter than to be a de facto spouse, and so the concept still does not fully address discrimination. It doesn't put same-sex couples in the same position as opposite-sex couples. So my argument would be that that concept of interdependency relationship in the superannuation law is really really intended to cover other kinds of relationships, not couple relationships, and currently we're trying to fit same-sex couples into that box. The third recommendation is about children, and I don't want to say very much about it. I'm aware that the Commission's inquiry is not specifically directed at children. It is about same-sex couples.
Well,
but I'd like to make the point that children are an important part nowadays of many couple families, and so hence my submission that it's relevant to the Commission's inquiry to examine areas where the children of same-sex couples are not treated equally.
I mean, I think we've the Commission's found that submission fairly persuasive, so
I don't have full solution on the children aspect, as you would have noticed from the submission. I'm not an expert in the law relating to children. You may have had other submissions that would help you there. I think it's very complex because it's a combination of federal and state law as regards the status of children. And so you may find it's a difficult thing for the Commission to completely address in this inquiry. But I commend you for considering it, and I do think it's something that the Commission should raise, at least.
Well, we're certainly looking at it, and how we'll, what recommendations we'll make, I don't know yet, but no, I take that point.
So I'm happy to answer any specific questions now.
Well, thank you. As I said, this has been a particularly helpful submission. And my questions are mainly going to relate to taxation law, because that's the area where we found it submission most valuable, although I don't by that mean to dismiss your submissions in the superannuation area. But you note in your submission that although the federal government has legislated to limit the definition of marriage to a man and a woman in the Marriage Amendment Act, that legislation doesn't affect the extended definition encompassing de facto spouses in the tax law and other federal laws. What scope is there then for that extended definition in tax law and other federal laws to be interpreted to include same-sex couples?
I think that's a good question. I have argued, as an academic, in a sense, putting the argument as one would do in an academic context, that there is scope to interpret that extended definition of spouse, and perhaps it's worth just reading out that definition. Spouse in relation to a person includes another person who, although not legally married to the person, lives with the person on a genuine domestic basis as the husband or wife of the person. I see that as incorporating a sort of a reasoning by analogy approach, and I think it would be possible to interpret that definition of spouse to say by analogy to a husband or wife. Mm. So using that word in an analogous way. Mm. So you could then say, well, any two people who are living in the way that essentially we would think of as a husband and wife, and there's a lot of law at the state level as to what that would mean, living as a couple domestically and so on. It would be possible to read that definition more broadly. However, of course, there are now two tribunal decisions, no court decisions, but two tribunal decisions, one on income tax, one on superannuation, which do not read it that way and which require the words as husband and wife to mean specifically in the role of the masculine husband and in the role of the feminine wife.
Yeah.
So I think there's scope, but so far no tribunal has agreed with me.
Which may mean that it requires legislative amendment to get to that point rather than interpretation.
I would say certainly no tribunal would find differently. It's unfortunate that we haven't got a court decision, but even so, I think it's very unlikely that a court would read it differently.
Although you've said, haven't you, that there's dicta in Australian and English courts' decisions that suggest that the definition of spouse you said cannot include same-sex relationships.
The cases I refer to about marriage, there is some suggestion in some, as I say, dicta, so not binding decisions, but the occasional judge has said, well, perhaps the meaning of spouse at common law should move with the times. You know, there's a sort of sense that the law, the common law, could grow and change, but no decision has as yet made that change.
Okay. Given the absence of any binding rulings from the ATO to exclude same-sex couples from the definition of spouse in the ITAA 1987, how much weight's given to, or what's the impact of interpretive decisions which have stated that spouse doesn't include a member of a same-sex couple?
Interpretive decisions are published, anonymised, so with names removed, published actual decisions of the ATO. So the fact that there are four or five interpretive decisions that have been published dealing specifically with same-sex partners is an indication that there have been a number of either private rulings or just private decisions made in assessments of individuals by the ATO on these issues, and then what they have done is remove names and publish the principle, if you like. The interpretive decisions have no binding status. Published rulings, something called a tax ruling, is binding on the commissioner. It's not law, but it binds the commissioner if it generates a favourable outcome for a taxpayer. So what we call ATOIDs, or these interpretive decisions, are indicative of the ATO's position on an issue because they are evidence that the ATO has taken that position in the past in a number of instances. But that's all. Nonetheless, in the profession we use them a lot as indicative of the ATO's view.
Right. You say that an individual taxpayer is entitled to claim a tax offset against his or her income tax in respect of a dependent opposite sex married or de facto spouse. What's the criteria required to prove one's dependent status in relation to receiving a spouse tax offset?
The word dependent, it's essentially by looking at the income of the spouse. So there is a concept called separate net income, which is a measure of the amount of income that the spouse receives. And if that amount of income is below a certain threshold, it's fairly low as well. I can't remember the exact amount, but you know, you would think it's sort of under $10,000 for sure, but possibly lower than that. Then their spouse who is earning more would fall into the entitlement to take the tax offset. So it's solely an income measure. There's no other concept of dependence there.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. If interdependency were introduced as a relationship category in this area, would same-sex couples be likely to receive the dependent spouse tax offset?
So the suggestion might be if the concept of interdependency relationship was brought into the tax law, other than just for superannuation, but also for all sorts of other criteria.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose the answer would be yes, if they fell within the definition of interdependency relationship. The dependent spouse rebate would always, over and above that, I think, import this income threshold because
right.
it's a means. It's essentially a means-tested benefit. If your spouse is earning a certain amount, then we will no longer give you the rebate. It's, if you like, it's a subsidy for a homemaker type of a family. You've got a breadwinner and a homemaker. It's a subsidy. If you no longer have your homemaker, you don't have that entitlement.
Right.
So that would be an overlaid on top of the interdependency relationship. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think I think it does. I struggle to get my head around some of these things.
My argument would still be that interdependency relationship, as it is defined, does not incorporate exact equality with de facto spouse. Yeah.
Now, you said the dependent spouse offset is generally below, well, it's at least below $10,000.
Yes, I'm sorry that I don't have that number. I can easily provide you with that.
That's not a, well, look, if you could, in the course of time, that would be helpful, but it's just... you note that the dependent spouse tax offset has largely been replaced by the welfare payments from the family tax benefit. A and B for families with children. Does this tax benefit apply at all to same-sex families with children?
You're correct that the family tax benefit, where there is a child in the of the couple, essentially we are now into family tax benefit, as you say.
You said it, I don't.
that is correct. I beg your pardon, family tax benefit. Although it's called a tax benefit, it is actually a transfer, what I would call a transfer or social security payment, although it's called tax benefit. It is tested on the in terms of per child or on the basis of the income of a couple. In the Social Security law, so the Social Security Act, a couple is defined not to include a same-sex couple. There is a concept of member of a couple. And the family, similarly in the Family Assistance Act, member of a couple does not include same-sex couples. However, family tax benefit, because it is tested... it applies on the basis of a parent-child relationship. In quite a number of circumstances, a member of a same-sex couple who has a child would be able to claim family tax benefit.
That's what I was thinking. Because the couple would actually be defined out by the Social Security Act, as it were.
So there are two. Family tax benefit A... depends on the joint income of a couple. Obviously, if same-sex couples are not even seen by the law, which is the case, they would only see the income of the person who is defined as the parent of the relevant child, and therefore you might be eligible for family tax benefit A. Family tax benefit B is defined, calculated solely on the income of the person as the, who is the parent of the child, and so in a sense the couple relationship is not directly relevant to family tax benefit B. It's you might think, and in some ways one might argue, that the dependent spouse rebate should be abolished altogether as a matter of policy. It is essentially, as I said, it's a subsidy for a homemaker relationship, but it's a homemaker relationship where there are not young children, because where there are young children, you're now in the family tax benefit regime. And so, perhaps it's no longer appropriate in this day and age. That's a separate question. But I might point out to the Commission that it still costs the government, in a way, a significant amount of money. It's what we would call a tax expenditure. That is, we provide this concession, and so there is revenue foregone by the government in providing this tax concession.
Sure.
And the estimated revenue foregone in the current year is about $30 million.
Okay.
So it is still being used by taxpayers and is worth a certain amount of money in itself.
Yep. Do couples without children still qualify for the dependent spouse tax offset?
Yes, that's right. So that's what I was just saying, is that couples without children are in just that dependent spouse rebate provision in the tax law, and yes, they do still seem to be claiming it. So they are still potentially qualifying for it.
How much is family tax benefit? Well, yeah. How much is family tax benefit worth? You've benefit A and B worth. You've talked about the, what did you call it, an offset to the government? But I mean to families or to
The spouse rebate or the spouse offset. What an offset is a reduction in the tax owed by a taxpayer. So the spouse offset is really only worth a few hundred dollars a year, if that's all it is.
Right.
However, where there are children, family tax benefit is worth quite a lot more than that. For example, it's paid at a maximum rate up to a family income of $40,000. So, for example, family tax benefit A may amount to around about $4,000 per child per year. I could give you correct figures for this.
Again, if you could, that would be helpful.
So I didn't, in the submission, I didn't actually specifically cover family tax benefit, because I sort of defined it as a social security payment and said I wasn't addressing it, obviously because I ran out of time.
Yeah, sure.
But I do have a summary of it here. So if you haven't received submissions on that from anyone else,
I don't think we have. So if you,
I could probably send that to the Commission.
That would be helpful if you could do that. Yeah, because I don't think we have. Emily's confirming that we haven't. So that would be great.
And also perhaps the dollar value to an individual. So I'm sorry I haven't been able to provide you with any.
No, that's okay. But that'd be very helpful. Thank you. Your submission says that although maintenance, I'm sorry, I'm going on to
that's fine.
Spousal maintenance payments. Submission says that although maintenance payments to a spouse are not tax deductible for an individual taxpayer as their private expenses, an individual who receives maintenance payments from an opposite sex spouse is entitled to an exemption from tax for those payments. And you say this exemption wouldn't apply for same-sex partners receiving periodical maintenance payments. Do you know what tax rate would apply to maintenance payments received by a member of a same-sex couple?
It would just be what we would call their individual marginal rate. So if a member of a same-sex couple was in receipt of periodical maintenance, it would be classified as assessable income to them. And then say they were earning a salary of $35,000 plus they were receiving some maintenance, we would add the maintenance payments to the salary, and then it would just be the tax rate that applies to their total income. So for someone on $35,000, the marginal rate is 30%.
Right.
Yeah, so individual marginal rate, we just include it in their income in the usual way.
Yep. Okay, I'm going to go to capital gains tax if I can now. You say that the transfer of assets to an opposite sex spouse or former spouse following a court order or maintenance agreement will attract capital gains tax concessions, the tax on any capital gain in the assets transferred to the spouse would be deferred and the gain would be taxable only on the subsequent disposal of those assets, and that that's not applicable to the transfer of an asset to a same-sex partner. In 2006, the AAT confirmed this view, and it appears that the tribunal found that to qualify for capital gains tax relief, you must be defined as a male and female couple.
Yes, that's the most recent decision that I mentioned.
That's the one that you referred to.
That's right.
Okay, and you've talked about the impact of that case. So there's probably not much more to add.
Although that case was about the capital gains tax rules, the definition of spouse is a general one, and so their interpretation of spouse as relevant for CGT is relevant to the whole Act.
I see.
I should just add on CGT. I'm sorry, you probably have other issues, but
That's right.
I think it's a matter of growing importance, the capital gains tax, and in some ways it's one of the perhaps the most generous tax concession for couples in the tax law. As we now have at state and territory level property division regimes now for most for same-sex couples in most situations, I think we will increasingly see situations where there is breakdown of relationship and there is a property division agreement of some kind under state law. Of course, same-sex couples don't come into the property division relationship provisions in the Family Law Act at the federal level, but increasingly we see this at the state level, and there is significant tax on that transfer if there is any appreciated gain in the property. So I do think that it's hard to quantify the cost of this to individuals, but I think this is an increasing problem. Whereas, as you've identified, some of the other tax concessions, the dependent spouse rebate, for example, are perhaps of not that much relevance nowadays.
That's what,
the family structures we have nowadays, and, and perhaps dollar value is not all that significant. But
this one you think could be?
This one I think could be. If you have a property that has 50,000 of appreciation, essentially the tax on that is going to be between $15,000 and $20,000. And if there's no rollover, what we call a rollover of that tax into the hands of the other person, then you have a significant burden on on those individuals.
You talked about impacts more broadly on children, and we discussed that. I wondered, though, given the definition of child under the ITAA, would the concessions that are available and offsets that are available to a non-biological parent of a child in a heterosexual would those concessions that you talk about, those concessions and offsets, be available to a non-biological parent of a child in a heterosexual relationship? In other words, I'm trying to get the discrimination comparison as between heterosexual and gay and lesbian relationships.
I think in many circumstances they would, and that is because, well, two reasons. One, the definition of adopted child, if you were to have a situation where there is a couple and the children in that relationship are not the biological children of one of the members of that heterosexual couple, it under state and territory law, that member of the couple can adopt that child, whereas at the moment we only have adoption in, I think, two states for same-sex couples. So if they can adopt, then you will fit into this definition. The second situation, or the second aspect in which you may get recognition in the situation you describe, status of children legislation tends to presume parenthood in certain situations. And one of those situations is where you have a de facto couple together and a child is in that relationship. This is an opposite sex couple. Then sometimes status of children legislation will deem or assume parentage of that child, and that will then flow into the tax law at the federal level through the ordinary meaning of the word child. So the definition of child in the federal tax law is an inclusive one. Child right. includes adopted child, stepchild or ex-nuptial child. It also includes what we would think of as the general law or common law meaning of child,
right.
Which itself incorporates all of the state and territory status of children legislation.
Right.
So this is why I say it's complex,
yeah.
but in many situations where you have opposite sex couples, if there is a presumption of parenthood as a result of some of that state or territory legislation or even at common law, then you will fit into this definition.
Right.
The word stepchild as well, if you have the non-biological child of a couple where there is a second marriage and they become what we think of as a stepchild of that new relationship, stepchild is not defined in the tax law. So again, we're back into the general law meaning of what we understand stepchild to mean, and it tends to require that there is a marriage,
right.
a subsequent marriage. Of course, that is limited to opposite sex.
Well, that was my next question, actually, as to whether there were any instances where the non-biological mother in a lesbian relationship could be considered a stepchild.
I think in some ways you would think, why not?
Mm.
And it really does come down to how you interpret stepchild, and we have no statutory guidance. My belief, and I think I might have referred you in the submission to the Victorian Law Reform Commission's inquiry into reproductive technology. It's in footnote 4. It's interesting because in that inquiry they do actually discuss this issue as to what these different aspects of child mean, including stepchild. And
right.
there seems to be an assumption that it requires a marriage. Perhaps that's something that is fluid.
So might that be a way that the definition could be changed to incorporate non-biological parents?
That would be, I guess, one way to do it. It would link recognition of the child to recognition of the relationship, though. So I think it would work,
yes.
and in that sense it would eliminate some of that discrimination if we were able to say that the non-biological child of one member of a same-sex couple can be the stepchild of that person. Just as we can say that in a second marriage, the non-biological child of one of those people in the marriage is recognised as a stepchild.
Mm.
In my submission, I'm not sure if I say it in the submission, but the reason I think the issue of children is complex is because I would argue that we need to eliminate discrimination in respect of children in all situations, and not just linking it to the couple relationship of the parents. And so my concern is that if we link it to the couple relationship of the parents, we still don't get at every single situation in respect of children. So, but it would address some of the issues that you raise.
Okay. Thank you. Just going to family court parenting orders, you say that the court can issue parenting orders in relation to the non-biological parent in same-sex relationships, but that these don't affect the status of children for other purposes. What authority does a parenting order grant a non-biological parent, and what are those other purposes that you mentioned?
The family court can and does issue parenting orders in respect of what you would think of as non-biological parents who have care or responsibility for a child, and that includes same-sex parents in same-sex relationships. It could also be broader than that, grandparents, whatever. What that order does is it recognises and in fact at law in a sense provides that person stands in the role of parent.
Right.
Has care and responsibility, specifically in respect of family law matters. Children are under the Family Law Act, so if there was to be any issue about who has care or responsibility of a child, the parenting order is tells us who that person is in the first instance. Whereas it might, if the member of a same-sex couple does not have a parenting order, there may be nothing that would tell the court or any other person that they have that parenting role. When I say it doesn't flow into other areas of law, I mean specifically federal law,
okay.
In that it doesn't affect the definition of child in the tax law,
right,
or the superannuation law.
Okay.
The mere fact of a parenting order does not change those provisions.
Right. Okay, so that's what you were getting at.
That's what I'm getting at there. It also is somewhat limited in that parenting orders expire when a child reaches the age of 18, assuming there is one outstanding until that point. So obviously for tax and superannuation law, once a child, always a child, in a sense, but not under a parenting order.
You've talked about the baby bonus benefits that aren't available to same-sex couples, and also the second one.
Childcare tax offset.
Yes.
Yep.
What are they worth? What are we talking about here?
The baby bonus has now been repealed, so you probably don't need to worry about it anymore. It was in existence until 2004.
Right.
So occasionally people know about it, and so I still occasionally have to deal with it, but it's now been repealed. So the important one is the child care tax offset, which is effective from 1 July 2005.
Mm-hmm.
So just this first fiscal year that we've just finished is the first year in which people are using that child care tax offset.
Yep.
It's worth a significant amount of money. Child care tax offset may be up, it's for essentially 30% of child care fees in respect of each child of a taxpayer.
Sorry, of child care fees, did you say?
Child care fees. So the child is in child care and fees are being paid.
Okay, I can relate to that.
That's right. In excess of any child care benefit that the person receives. So we now have two child care support mechanisms.
Okay,
child care
benefit
is in the Social Security
or
the child care benefit law, but it's essentially a transfer payment.
Sure.
Child care tax offset is a tax reduction.
Yeah, so it's on top of that.
On top of the child care benefit, that's right.
Yeah.
It has an indexed cap of $4,000 per child per year.
Right.
So the maximum a person could attain is $4,000 in a year.
Yeah.
But that's quite a significant
subsidy,
much bigger than most of the other family rebates. I should say, and I did briefly state it in my submission, but perhaps not clearly enough, the test for a child for the child care tax offset is actually broader than the meaning of child in for other tax purposes. The child care tax offset entitlement actually depends on the categories that are in the family tax benefit regime, not in the tax law. So the definition of an eligible child, if you like, for child care tax offset is what we would call an FTB child, a family tax benefit child. And that definition of FTB child could encompass situations where there is a parenting order in respect of the child. Again, I can provide you with a bit more information because we're back into the Social Security regime, if you like, here. So I'm happy to send you a little bit more information about that. So it is the one place in the income tax law where we have this broader conception of child, more similar to the welfare law than the other tax provisions.
Well, if you were able to send us that, that would be very helpful.
So yes, I can send you that. And what that means is that a member of a same-sex couple who is eligible for family tax benefit A or B, or for the childcare benefit, that is, they are in a situation of either the biological parent or have parenting orders, essentially legally in a position of care and responsibility for a child under those laws, then they may be eligible for childcare tax offset as well.
Okay. Yep. Thank you. I'm conscious of your time, but can I just ask you about child maintenance trusts?
Yes.
Can you talk about needing to be the child of both parents for that benefit. Given that this provision can apply to children of other relationships where a child's born to parents who are not living together as spouses at the time. Is there any way that this could be interpreted as applying to same-sex relationships? Or would the definition of child prevent that from occurring?
Again, I think that's a good question. This is one area where there is a binding tax ruling that I referred to. It is taxation ruling TR98/4, which deals with all aspects of child maintenance trusts. The ruling deals specifically with this question of children of, as you say, quote, other relationships. The word other relationships comes from the statute, so they have to interpret that phrase, other relationships, child of. And it specifically states in the ruling that if that is the situation and property is to be put into a trust in respect of a person, that person must be the child of both parents. And so what they have done then is we're back into the statutory definition of child of both parents. And so if you have if you did fall into adoption, you would be okay. If you did fall into a stepchild, you'd be okay. But the ordinary meaning of child would require biological heritage. Right. So it's quite there's a few ins and outs in order to get to that position, but the ATO has taken that position. Now, they could be wrong. It's never been tested in a court, but they have taken that interpretive position.
Okay. I'm in the other provisions section now of your submission. And you talk about not being able to or allowed to deduct a payment to a relative that exceeds a reasonable amount, and that can include and you list who that includes, and then you say that the same-sex partner wouldn't be included in that list.
That's correct, because they are not a spouse. So we're back to that general meaning of spouse in the tax law.
But then you say it'd be unfair and doubly discriminatory for the notion of family or spouse to be extended to include a member of a same-sex couple.
I don't really say why, do I? I'm just reading it. I'm sorry about that.
My question is, how do you suggest that achieving equality while not adversely affecting same-sex couples?
Okay, let me clarify my position there. It is sometimes argued, as it is argued in the welfare context, that it's actually more advantageous not to be recognised at law. You know, same-sex couples are better off for not being recognised at law. And in the income tax context, one way in which this is argued, and on the terms of the legislation this is correct, is that, well, you're not recognised as a spouse for all the anti-avoidance rules. I've given you just one example of such a rule. The commissioner can come in and disallow a taxpayer a deduction if they're making payments to family members, essentially, although they don't do any work. You know, so they're employing their family members in name only, claiming a certain amount as a deduction. Clearly, this is an avoidance activity. We have a specific provision to deal with that. Because a same-sex partner is not recognised as a spouse, it would appear that, for example, I could pay my same-sex partner for just turning up, you know, or I give them the title manager in my business, I pay them a certain amount of money, I claim a tax deduction for it. This provision cannot apply to me because they are not my spouse, you see. So the law, if you like, doesn't see that avoidance activity. And there are a range of other provisions in the tax law that are in some ways similar. There's a definition of associate, which would usually include spouse and children and so on. And every time you fall into one of these provisions, if you like, the commissioner is given power, the ATO, power to investigate or disallow that transaction. So arguably it's to the advantage of same-sex couples not to be covered by these anti-avoidance rules.
Sure.
So my point and my concern, I think this is unlikely, but my concern in respect of the federal government is that they could take steps to amend the anti-avoidance rules so as to ensure that relative would include a same-sex couple without amending the other provisions of the tax law, like the rebate, the childcare tax offset and so on, that would give concessions.
Sure.
And it's unlikely, but I would not want there to be a window for that.
It's a similar concern to the concern about amending Social Security law to apply to same-sex couples so that people can't get the single benefit and then not making other changes.
That's correct. Yeah. In fact, I think that's much more likely. I would be much more worried about activity by the government to tighten up eligibility rules for the welfare payments without actually extending equality across the board.
We've had a number of submissions on that.
Yeah, people are very anxious about that. Yeah. And this is, if you like, another little example of that potential.
Yeah. Look, I'm conscious of the time. We had a few questions that I was going to raise with you about your recommendations, but if you're...
I think I have 10 minutes, if I'm happy to, or do it in writing.
Well, maybe
if you
my
like.
Watch is fast.
All right, 8 minutes.
Well, your recommendation talks about the expansion of the definition of spouse to legally recognise same-sex couples. What sort of definition would you like to see?
So I avoided making a specific recommendation.
Yes.
As I say in the submission, there are a range of forms of words that could consider or recommend.
And I wondered whether there was, one state or territory form or another form.
I think the New South Wales, which I did put as an example, the New South Wales domestic relationship law is quite a good example. It's concise. It incorporates a concept of living together as a couple, which has been interpreted in the law for heterosexual de factos for 20 years, and it also bears a similarity to the Social Security concept of member of a couple, and that has an advantage, I think, in terms of consistency across federal statutes. So I do think that is quite a good definition. I'm not familiar with every single definition in the states and territories. I'm familiar with some of them.
Right.
And so that's why I left it open.
Okay.
I would say probably not the Victorian one, which is the one that I'm more familiar with. Nan knows that. The Victorian one is somewhat complex and has a couple of layers to it, living together and not living together. And these things are all worked out at state level as a matter of political compromise, as you can imagine.
Yep.
So I quite like the New South Wales definition, but I would think it's important to see if any of the other definitions might fit better as a matter of overall policy.
Okay. Well, my last question, I think you've dealt with, which related to the issue of why couples oughtn't to be included in the interdependency definition, why that was important, and I think you spoke about that really at the start of the discussion. So... That completes our question, but can I just say again how useful your submission was, and we've really appreciated your input both formally and with the discussions that you've had with staff. So thank you very much.
Oh no, thank you.